Session number 23215, Reel 9.
Colonel Woodgate, Reel 9. You were saying you went down into Jordan with an expedition.
That's right, yes. Padre and I took two jeeps down to Petra. We went down through the Hejaz Railway, which Lawrence used to blow up in the 1418 War, and then to Petra. The Transjordan Frontier Force had a post down just by Petra, so we were able to stay there. And then we came back through the hills on a very, very rocky track. And over the Mount Nebo, where Moses viewed the Promised Land, it was a very interesting expedition. Petra's an extraordinary place. These huge buildings cut in the rock. Some people went on leave there. More people went on leave down into Luxor in Egypt. Incidentally, the Palestine headquarters also had in their, under their command Arab Legion and Transjordan Frontier Force.
Did you have anything to do with them yourself?
I personally didn't, no, no.
Presumably though there must have been liaison.
Oh yes, must, yes. Of course British officers were seconded to the Transjordan Frontier Force and to presumably the Arab Legion, yes. Well, the Arab Legion was commanded by a British chap called Glubb, Major General Glubb, who lived in a village not far away. And I don't know quite what. Transjordan Frontier Force has presumably been disbanded, and the Arab Legion is presumably the forces of the King of Jordan.
Jordanian Army.
Jordanian Army, is it now? Yes, yes.
When you were out and about in Palestine, going to your concert or visiting, how did you get on with the population, with the people that you met on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, one didn't. If you were out walking along the road, or I think you said Saida to people looking after sheep and that sort of thing. I think people were apt to drive far too fast along the roads. But, well, it seemed to have got on very well for the local population, mostly Arab. Of course, there were Jewish settlements then, but not very extensive. Of course, the whole thing got bedeviled by in the early 20s, Balfour had said Palestine it would be a good home for the Jews. They obviously wanted a home, and it was obviously a good place for them, but nobody at that time ever thought they'd take the whole thing over. And of course, it's all become bedeviled by the huge number of Jews being pouring out of Europe, which we were supposed to stop them coming in and flooding the place, but it was very, very difficult. And it became more and more difficult. And then Bevin in 1948, I think, said, well, we're no longer going to hold this mandate.
At the time, was there a feeling in the division that you could contain the level of trouble and that you could do something in the
long term? Yes, I think. If only people would set about it in a reasonable way.
What would they have needed to do, do you think? Or what was the idea of what they needed to do at the time?
Well, I think it's... You see, there were certain parts of Palestine were obviously Hebron and places were Arab towns and villages. And it's been such a pity that in those places the Jews have insisted on building houses, and it hasn't, the population hasn't integrated. I think it would have been better if they had been kept in the settlements, I think, worked quite well. But on the other hand, if you're going to have a country with different people in, it's much better if they can be integrated. But it's been so bedeviled by these terrorist groups and the building of Jewish houses in that obviously Arab parts of the world, it's become bedeviled. I cannot really see how it can possibly be settled.
But, I mean, did people think that it could be settled in 1946?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Were there any direct attacks on soldiers of the division while you were there?
No. No. I wouldn't know, but I don't think there were. One would have heard about it.
Presumably, if there had been casualties, you'd have got involved with replacements for them, wouldn't you?
Yes. No, I don't think... I don't think there was any animosity to British troops from either side, except so far as the terrorist and Jewish organisations were concerned.
Mentioning the need to keep soldiers occupied with education as one thing. Now, one of the things the army relies upon greatly for keeping soldiers busy is sport. Was that being employed as a way of keeping soldiers engaged and happy at the time?
As what?
Sport.
Sport, yes. Yes. When General Castles was a very keen cricketer, and I think after I left in March or April, I think, there was quite a lot of cricket going on, yes, and General Castles played himself. I was a keen cricketer, but I never played while I was there. I did play tennis with one of our padres. I don't know where I got a tennis racket from. But there was probably more sport going on in the battalions than I realised. And particularly after I left, because it would be summer then. It was just the end of winter when I left.
What was the state of discipline like when you were in Palestine?
Oh, all right, yes. I would have said so, yeah.
You said that in at the end of the war in Germany there was a reduction in the level of discipline. It deteriorated. And
Well, of course, it was very difficult at the end of the war in Germany. German army is surrendering all round you. and a sort of feeling of relief that the war was over. And odd people wanting to get demobilised, wondering what was going to happen. As you know, various people were raped. Not all that number, really.
In Palestine, presumably you'd have been getting, as reinforcements, men who hadn't served in the war, who were
servicemen. Yes.
How did they respond to being sent out?
I think all right. We got some, of course, at divisional headquarters. My staff captain was hadn't been in the war in Europe. No, I don't think there's any difficulty in that.
The other problem often with occupation duties and internal security is morale. What was the state of morale?
I would have said it was all right. It was an interesting country to be in. Things were going on. As I say, these parties and going to Jerusalem and Nazareth, Bethlehem, and remains of Jerash. Roman remains of Jerash. No, I would have thought there was plenty of interest. I don't think there was any real trouble while I was there.
What was your main system of communication when you were in the headquarters in Palestine? Were you relying on line communication or were you relying on wireless mainly?
I think mostly line communication. But I would think the battalions practice their wireless and on exercises and things. But I didn't ever speak on the wireless to anybody when we were at Beit Daras. One had a phone and presumably a switchboard if you wanted to speak to anybody. One presumably, as I say, had the switchboard. You said you wanted headquarters Palestine or headquarters Middle East or Palestine police or what have you.
Were you dealing mainly with the brigade headquarters or were you dealing direct with battalions when you were doing your normal work?
No, with brigade headquarters, yes.
I'm not sure what the difference was between your business with Palestine, headquarters Palestine, and with headquarters of Middle East Land Forces. Where were the areas of responsibility?
Yes. Well, of course, Middle East Land Forces were dealing with things right along to Tunisia and presumably Greece. Whereas headquarters Palestine was very local, I think, as I said. They had the Trans-Jordan Frontier Force and the Arab Legion, but I would have said they were very local.
But for what purposes would you go to headquarters Middle East? Because I'd have expected you would go through HQ Palestine for virtually everything.
Well, you would have done, yes, except being airborne forces. We thought we could get more
or what we wanted quicker, by going direct to headquarters Middle East. You see, we had a airborne forces had a direct had an air directorate at the War Office, so that in no time you'd find yourself dealing with somebody at the War Office, particularly when we were reorganizing after Germany. Several times I had to go up to the War Office.
When did you come back from Palestine?
It was April, I think. I did look it up, but I...
Was that April 47?
No. War finished in 45.
Yes.
46.
Yes.
I was out in Palestine for just about 6 months. Mm.
Who took over from you?
Oh, a chap called Paddy Liddle, Royal Ulster Rifleman, regular soldier. He'd been a company commander in one Royal Ulster Rifles. And, of course, an old friend of RAQ, Norman Wheeler. Actually, out in Palestine, 1 hour you are... We're in... What were you saying?
You said that Paddy Liddle was your successor.
Oh, yes.
And then you...
Paddy Liddle, that's right, yeah. And a chap called Tony Goldthorpe, who'd been staff captain RA, took over from Cliff Norbury. Of course, at the time I was demobilised, Cliff Norbury went back to the 9th Battalion, which he was an old 10th Essex chap. At that time, Napier Crookenden was commanding them.
How did you get back to England?
Ah, well, that was... I went round to my... I said goodbye to divisional headquarters. I had quite a lot of baggage. Went round to 3rd Brigade headquarters, where they were having a farewell party for Larry Major de Bury, who married a cousin of Pat's. We had this party, taken, carried into the staff car, Humber staff car, went to sleep there, were woken by his batman in the middle of the Sinai Desert. We were on our way to Alexandria, from which one was demobilized, or pushed on the way. Stayed an odd night in Cairo, visited the pyramids, went on to Alexandria, and saw they'd put prefabricated houses up for people being demobilized to see what there was. And then got in a boat, and I found it very difficult to carry all my kit. In Haifa and Alexandria, I think, the boat doesn't come into the side. You have to have tender goes out. Talking of tenders going out, when we came back from Normandy, we walked. Marched down Mulberry Harbour, and one hoped one wouldn't fall off. When you got to the end, a duck came, you got onto one of these amphibious things, went out to an American Liberty ship, and they had sort of grappling ropes down the side. You had to jump from this duck, clutch onto this thing and haul yourself.
On the scrambling there.
One was so relieved at coming back from Normandy, one didn't mind. Anyway, I did. It is a problem if you've got kit. You get tender takes you out to the ship, then you have to climb up this sort of gangplank up the side. Because I had my goatskin coat with me, which was very useful. The first winter of the war, after the war, first winter of 46, the gas in our offices was very, very low. The snow was thick on the ground. So I took my goatskin coat up to the office and used to sit in it there.
Were you demobilised in Egypt or when you got back to England?
No, in England.
In England.
Yes. And
how was that done? What happened during the process?
Oh, one went into this demobilisation centre. You collected a suit and an overcoat. And then went on your way. I think, I can't remember, we came into Dover. So it's a very rough passage over. Came in from Dover. And then demobilised at Guildford, I think it was. I found my way up to London. And I remember... On our train journey, on our Paddy Little, who took over from me, was a great friend of Hugh Weldon, who was a well-known chap at the BBC. And he sort of travelled back with us, and I ended up in a taxi in London with Hugh Weldon. He said, oh, I'm going to try and get into the BBC, see how it goes. We both said to each other how lovely it was to be back. Because London looked very dilapidated at that time. And then he went his way, and I went mine.
Now, you'd been in uniform for a number of years.
Yes.
And you said that you're anxious to get back into civil life to practice the law. Did you find it difficult to become a civilian again after being in uniform?
Not really, no. Mm. No. No. My sister lived in Chelsea. She used to drive for the MTC. So I used to go there from time to time, and I stayed there. My parents were living near Saffron. Well, we were talking about Saffron Walden, weren't we? Which we'll talk about later. Then I went down there for a bit of leave. Then I went to see various people, Brigadier Hill, and living on the Isle of Wight. My old former staff captain was living in Devon. And... my former AQ, before Norman Wheeler, John Baines, he was a solicitor too. He'd not gone back into the law. He'd gone to work for some financier. So one various people I went to see, and as I say, I really went back to practice rather too soon. I ought to have taken a longer bit of leave while I could.
What do you think are the advantages of having served, looking back on it as a whole?
Oh, very great. Oh, yes, I learnt a lot. I had a very good CO in old 10th Essex, Tom Hearn. He taught us a lot. We had a very good brigade commander. We were talking about old Stanier. And then, of course, James Hill was a marvellous person to work for, and learnt a lot from him. I've been very lucky the whole way through to have very good chaps to work for, and been with the same people all the time. Oh no, I learnt an enormous amount, except I forgot a lot of law in the meantime. No, I think it was very, very good training. And I was jolly lucky, merely to be left deaf instead of having my leg blown off. I thought I was so lucky. I didn't apply for a pension for a long time. But then an old friend of mine about 10 years ago said, well, silly not to. So I did. So I do get a bit of a pension from being there, which is very useful. It's not taxable.
Did you keep in touch with your old comrades after you had gone back into civil life?
Oh, very much. Well, of course, a lot of them came to me as clowns. Cliff Norman did, and John Wilkes, our signals officer, General Lasbury. When General Lasbury commanded 3rd Brigade, he was in 1st Division, but Brigadier Hill not being eligible to come to Palestine, General Lasbury took over.
Wasn't he the commander of the Air Landing Brigade in...
The commander of the... At where?
At Arnhem?
No.
He wasn't.
A 1st Parachute Brigade.
1st Parachute Brigade.
Yes. The commander of our Air Landing Brigade was General Brigadier Kindersley, Lord Kindersley, and he got wounded with Lord Dovett on the start line for the Battle of Breville. And then Brigadier Flavelle took over the Air Landing Brigade. He was General Gale's company commander in the First World War. But then in Belgium, Brigadier Flavelle left us to command airborne establishments in England, and Brigadier Bellamy took over. And he came out to Palestine and commanded one of the parachute brigades. No, I learnt a lot. It was a great blow, of course, just as one had qualified in law to have to go into the army. But it was a very useful experience.